survived another round of South American qualifiers. Some of us have thrived. Some of us maybe have taken up drinking. And I am here with Adam Brandon and Brian Berti and Simon Edwards. We are all in various states of excitement, despair, none of us relaxation yet because we have another round to go on Tuesday. But let's check in with everybody and find out where you guys were when you watched your teams take on each other yesterday for us in this round of CONMEBOL qualifiers. And again, I'm just going to go alphabetically because that way I show no favorites yet. You'll have to earn my favoritism. So, Adam, donde were you? In my best English.
I was just at home watching this. Fortunately, I didn't go out and spend money on anything, as it was a complete disaster, which we'll come to in a minute. But yeah, generally we'll I'm okay. I've got a headache tonight. I don't know if it's related to the...
You know what? So my grandma says that when you cry too much, that's when your head hurts.
Okay. I haven't done too much crying.
All right. You've got another one to go. Brian, welcome. We're so excited to have you on the show. You are in Lima.
I am.
And congratulations. That was a pretty phenomenal game last night. Where were you watching?
I was watching it at home. I was planning to go to the game, actually, but it sold out really quickly. And yeah, it's the second match in a row I missed out on going to because I was going to go to an Ecuador game last month as well. But every time I went to a store, just keep redirecting me to another store. And eventually I just got sick of it and said, I'll just go to the Argentina game. But sold out really quickly. So it looks like Brazil then.
And Simon, I'm in New York, but I think that I should probably fly down to Colombia on Tuesday to watch this game. So, you know, I'll just take off from work, fly in for the game and then fly back. I think that makes total sense.
Yeah, do it. You know, right? Colombian, Caribbean coasts, you know, a bit of sun.
Colombia play all their games. The hurricane. No problem.
Colombia play all their games in the afternoon because, you know, they like playing in the heat. So, yeah, get a suntan. Be nice.
Great. No problem. Where were you watching the game?
I was watching it at home with my girlfriend, had some wine, and she was just shouting lots of Spanish swear words at the TV, and it worked.
And that was, maybe she should have started chatting a little bit sooner because that was a tight match.
It definitely was.
Adam, I'm going to start with you because not for any other reason, but because that was chronological. And also because I just want to take the time to pick on one of the three Valencias in this match in Ener Valencia with some kind of crazy that happened. So let's start with Ecuador and Chile. Everybody can join in here. Oh, man. Adam, what happened? What is going on? This is not the Chile that we have been seeing. Is this just Pizzi's Chile or is this symptomatic of a larger problem?
Well, you've given me a couple of choices to start with there. Let's start with Chile. Let's start with Chile and then... Then
let's all pile on Ener Valencia.
Yeah, exactly.
Stadium in an ambulance for no reason other than avoiding child support payments.
Yeah, it's crisis time with Chile, really. There were some signs under Juan Antonio Pizzi and when he took over that this wasn't going to be the same machine that we saw under Jorge Sampaoli. And at the moment, it's just looking a complete disaster. The main things that I've noticed is a lack of focus going into matches. So many mistakes on the field. Just the concentration hasn't been there since the win over Argentina in the Copa America. Lack of organisation. Team cohesion isn't quite right. You know, the passes are going astray a lot of the time. There's some arguments between the players. You know, there's always this rumour about Alexis Sanchez and Arturo Vidal don't particularly get on. I've never really seen it, but there was certainly a couple of incidents yesterday where they seemed to be arguing fiercely with each other and didn't seem to mince their words. But yeah, there was just so many disappointing performances. The defence was a complete disaster. Gonzalo Jara had an absolute nightmare. Enzo Rocco really struggled. Yeah, he's quite inexperienced at the back. You know, Chile really missed Gary Medel and and Francisco Silva in the midfield. Charles Aránguiz, that's one of the worst games I've ever seen him have. He was invisible for a lot of it.
And there were a lot of players, Adam, that were just not present. And I think Sanchez was the most, if I can make my words not make sense a little bit here, the most obviously not present. You know, we're used to seeing a very dominant Alexis Sanchez, especially in the EPL, but also recently for Chile. And he was just nowhere. It seemed like this was a player who was a different man. And I think the same went for a lot of these players who just seemed to be lost a little bit.
Well, yeah, what you've got to remember, you know, a lot of these players play in kind of very well-organized, well-drilled club sides where they have a very defined role and their manager completely knows what he's doing.
Are you blaming Pizzi for this?
Keeping
his job?
There's no one else to blame, you know. There's hardly anyone in Chile who doesn't blame him. Who else can you blame it on? You can't really say, oh, the players aren't up to it, because we've seen time and time again over the last few years that these Chile players have delivered.
So, but if these are very experienced Chilean players, like you said, they play for big teams. You've got Claudio Bravo, who has captained teams before. Bravo, I mean, that yellow card that he got, he played this. It was like his first game. You know, he came out of his goal for I don't know what reason. It looked like he was chasing seagulls. Are none of these players going to step up and sort of try to rally their? Well,
I think it's a confidence issue. I just think that the players don't feel secure playing under PC. I think they look a little bit confused as to what they should be doing. I think this was present at the Copa America as well, and miraculously kind of got sorted out in the second week in the knockout stages. And Chile suddenly looked unstoppable again, but it's kind of reared its ugly head since then. I don't know, but yeah, there's some players like Eduardo Vargas who's, you know, he looks really short on confidence at the moment. You know, he's not playing for Hoffenheim in Germany. He's benched there pretty much permanently at the moment. Mena, who's not having a very good time of it in Brazil, from what I understand from our friend Austin Miller, who regularly appears on this pod. And he's really only shone under Jorge Sampaoli's management with both Chile and Universidad de Chile. There's a lot of issues going on at the moment. And the only way I see it getting sorted, because the problem Chile have now is they have very few points to play with. You know, they really can't afford to drop many more points. They probably have to win 6 of the last 9 games. And I don't think Pizzi's done enough in these World Cup qualifiers so far. He hasn't really shown that he's capable of winning 6 of the next 9. You could point to the Copa America turnaround, and I hope that he proves me wrong again. And I think Peru at home is pretty much a perfect chance to get that right with Peru's awful away record, which I'm sure Brian will speak about. Oof. Later.
Brian, hold on to that one. We're gonna ask you about that one in a little bit. That was a challenge.
That sounds good.
But yeah, I just feel really kind of disappointed. I think it would be a real shame if Chile didn't make it to Russia, you know, two-time South American champions. I know that you don't agree with that, Jessica.
I am completely unbiased right now in my role as moderator. How dare you?
Did you enjoy Gonzalo Jara struggling for 90 minutes in the altitude?
I plead the Uruguayan fifth, which is a new thing that we Uruguayans say about Gonzalo Jara, who sexually assaulted one of our players and should never be allowed to play again. Anyway, moving on from there, I want to ask you about, in particular, about the defense, because I think you hit on Chile's defense. And for me, you know, Chile definitely had some moments where they looked a little bit dangerous, but the defense never looked like they were communicating. And you saw that in Ecuador's first goal. Cristian Ramirez's goal was really powerful. It was a great shot. It was his first international goal. Phenomenal for him. However, it came after a whiffed miss from Fidel. And the fact was that they still Chile's defense left Ramirez completely unmarked. So there was all this space in the box. What would you do now, Coach Brandon? Put on your coaching hat that I am awarding you. It's really fancy. I've bedazzled it. What would you do at home to Peru? Are you keeping the same defense? Are you changing the shape of the defense? Are you changing your players? Are you giving them another chance and giving them a really great pre-match pep talk?
Chile have very few options in this department, generally, and especially in these two qualifiers. As I already mentioned, you know, Gary Medel suspended. We covered the reason why in another pod, because he said...
Shocking. It's a shock suspense.
And Francisco...
If you have not heard of the reason why Gary Medel is suspended, go back and listen to our previous podcast, and please feel free to comment in English or Spanish on your feelings.
And Francisco Silva, he picked up an injury just before these two qualifiers. The alternatives at fullback, you know, you can always bring in Bosse York. Apparently, I think you've got to keep Isla on the right just because there's no real alternative there. And he does offer some attacking threat, although his final ball is usually pretty dreadful. The only change really could possibly make is Bosse York coming in for Mena. So, I don't know, Jesse. Like I say, there's very few options there to play with. I personally feel it's been a remarkable achievement from this Chile side to win those two Copa Americas and to do as well as they have been doing with such a kind of a ropey defence anyway on paper. What's usually worked for Chile is that the cohesion of the rest of the side has made up for the fact that the defence individually are quite weak and they kind of work as a whole team unit defending, but that just wasn't there against Ecuador. You know, some commentators here in Chile accused the team of kind of a lack of effort. And I don't think that's completely without foundation. It was kind of reminiscent of the final days of Gloria Borges' reign, where the players just looked like they'd stopped playing for him. So let's wait and see for Peru on Tuesday. But I was very impressed with Peru against Argentina. Although Peru's big problem is psychological, I think. They don't seem to quite have the same level of performance on the road.
All right. Before we let Brian take that on, let's just give Ecuador the credit that they're due. And I'm sorry, Adam, but Ecuador actually played really, really well. They played like the team that has been first or second in the table this whole time. What do you guys think?
Yeah, well.
Jump on in.
Yeah, I do want to make it clear, you know, I think Ecuador did play really well in this game. You know, it's a country that I have a major soft spot for, usually a kind of my second team in South America. So, yeah, I was kind of pleased for them.
You're talking to three people from three other countries that are not Ecuador, so whatever.
The big point I wanted to make on Ecuador, really, was the fact that their manager, Gustavo Quinteros, he was under real pressure heading into this game. Ecuador had been on a pretty poor run after a flying start, and he's made some really strange team selections over the past few months, including in the Copa America as well. You know, the team he put out against the USA was pretty bizarre, I thought, in the quarterfinal of that competition. And his substitutions usually stink as well. One thing which was overlooked in last month's qualifiers when they played Brazil was he took off Felipe Caicedo, who leads the line so well for Ecuador. He's a giant up front for them, holds the ball up well. And once he went off against Brazil, Ecuador lost more control of that match, and that's when Brazil scored all three of their goals. I don't think that was a coincidence either. I know that Brian wants to add his thoughts to this, and he was particularly impressed by one of Ecuador's wingers.
Well, you read my mind, because I actually wanted to give a thought on this game. Speaking of Quinteros, I think one of his biggest mistakes was playing Gabriel Achillier, because every time I've seen him from Emelec in Ecuador, he's been terrible. The only reason he puts him on is because, well, I've heard Ecuadorians say it's because he loves Emelec because he managed them before. But another reason is because he's good at set pieces, because he seems to score them a lot.
Were you particularly surprised by that choice or by anything else in the Ecuador squad?
Well, no, it wasn't a choice. Gabriel Chilier was suspended for the match, but I think that worked in Ecuador's favor because he's an absolutely terrible defender. So,
okay. You know, also, I've sort of seen these ups and downs and surprises. I've never been a huge... Not that I haven't been a fan, but I've never really understood Filipao until he proved me wrong and scored that third goal today. So I think with Ecuador, sort of, you never know when they're going to have these moments of brilliance. I thought Antonio Valencia, again, has just kept improving, both for Manchester United and for Ecuador. He's just solid. Really, his passing is stunning. Jump right in.
He's your man if you want to counterattack.
Everyone agrees fast. Everyone agrees.
If you clear the ball to Antonio Valencia and he can run, like, if he has space, then he's unstoppable. He's apparently one of the fastest players in the world.
And you see that in his strength as well on the ball. Simon, were you jumping in there?
Yeah, just going to say, I watched the game as well, and I was, Ecuador is so strong on the wings, so much power, so much pace. Sometimes they lack a little bit of quality with the final pass. I just think they could have scored 3 or 4 more goals in that game at the end. We got to a point where the Chile defenders were a bit scared to press and try and win the ball from the wingers because they just knew they were going to get beaten towards the end. And I think with a bit more composure, Ecuador could have scored a few more. But when they have such exciting, direct wingers and, you know, powerful, strong, you know, technically good, skillful players, a little bit of roughness in terms of the clinical style of the play, it doesn't really matter. They have created so many chances. And if they play like they did in this game, yeah, they should do well. They should get to the World Cup.
Yeah, I think we saw that with Noboa, I think, was hitting the post almost in the last minute of the play, which would have been, I don't even know if salt in the wound, but just a pile of pretzels in the wound for Chile.
Noboa is a wonderful player. Wonderful center midfielder. Majorly underrated in world football, he is.
I agree. It's because he plays for Rostov, which almost did a Leicester last year, but no one really paid attention to him, to be fair, outside from Russians.
Let's all pay attention to Ener Valencia, who is so fast and so great on that left-hand side and a mess. So listen, I think everybody who has kids or works with kids or knows kids or has heard of the existence of kids understands that it is not easy to take care of children. They, you know, their care and upbringing costs a lot of money. Ener Valencia has a 4-year-old child and owes £13,500 in child support. Any of my British friends here want to convert that into dollars for those of us listening from the United States of America? Who wants to take a stab at the math?
I think it's about 15, 16 now. The pound's gone down again against the dollar. So I think it's about $15,000, $16,000.
Great. So this is a substantial amount of diapers and Cheerios. What many a football player would do is use their, again, not insubstantial amount of money that they make playing for both their club team and their national team and put that towards supporting their child. Ener Valencia took a bit of a more creative approach. Would anybody like to tell us, Adam, Ryan, or Simon, what Ener Valencia did to swerve, avoid paying for the upkeep of his child? Someone?
What, you mean the ambulance where he
fell? Oh, yeah.
Well, first off, they tried to arrest him before the game, didn't they?
Uh-huh. This was telenovela-worthy antics from both the police and Ener Valencia.
And he managed to escape the clutches of the police just before the game. He then, I think the police decided to leave it till after the game to catch him. But Valencia came up with a very innovative way of trying to get away from the police by what appeared to fake an injury with about 15 minutes to go of the match, I think it was. And he went off the pitch and they put an oxygen mask on him. And there's this fantastic video, if you can find it on Twitter. It's filmed from the stands where you can see Ener Valencia being carried off on a stretcher. And behind him, there's like 3 or 4 police officers in pursuit of this cart with Ener Valencia on with the oxygen mask. They weren't buying his story of him being injured. What came to light a few hours after the game was that whilst the match was being played, that the two sets of lawyers involved in this case got together and came to an agreement over the child support payment. So, yeah, it looks like Enna's going to have to pay up, and he keeps his freedom.
So what you're saying is that faking an injury, leaving the pitch in an ambulance with oxygen actually works, correct?
Well, it worked for him. I'm not sure. I'm not sure it would have worked if his lawyers maybe hadn't sorted it out for him whilst he was running around in a field in Quito.
Got it. Okay. So, guys, don't come to us for legal advice, is what we're all telling you. Or to Enner Valencia. Great. Okay. Next up is just a little match between Uruguay and Venezuela. Whatever. Nothing really happened. We can skip it. I'm totally kidding. I was basically hyperventilating for 90 plus minutes. Guys, while I am so thrilled and could now breathe a little bit, my defense is non-existent. I don't know what happened to Sebastián Coates, who is 6'6", but played like a baby giraffe who doesn't know what to do with his limbs. I don't know what's going on with goalkeepers who decide to like leave their goals and become breakdancers. So can we talk about this game, please? Please, please, please.
I just want to add, I thought at the beginning, one of my predictions was that Venezuela was going to get a draw at Uruguay because, well,
that's a terrible prediction.
Well, I thought it was kind of basis at the beginning, but my whole point towards it is because Uruguay struggled with Venezuela. They obviously lost to them in USA a few months ago, and before yesterday, Uruguay had not beaten Venezuela at home since 2000. They obviously lost 3-0 in the 2006 qualifiers at home, and then the next two qualifiers that ended 1-1. So while Uruguay have by a mile been the strongest team, if Peñaranda has not missed an open net, we may be talking about a completely different game.
It was by sheer luck that we did not go down 2-0 in the first half. This was a game for me of two different halves, and that had all to do with Cavani and the midfield. So again, I'm very nervous about going to Colombia on Tuesday. Simon, we're going to talk about this. Muslera and that defense did not look solid or confident. And again, Godin was not supposed to come back from that ankle injury. He came back early, so maybe he was just getting his feet for real, literally, physically back under him. Josema isn't back. We will maybe have him back against Colombia. I will do a dance to the gods of injury and World Cup qualifiers to make that happen. But Peñaranda is phenomenal. He was dominating in speed and power in that first half. And both he and Rondon missed wide open nets. Coates was nowhere to be found. There was a hole where a giant half Scottish football player should have been. I think in the first half, because of that, Cavani was sort of uncertain as to whether he should be helping with the defense or playing this attacking position that he's been able to take at PSG. So it was only when he started playing up front that we were able to become really the dangerous side that we were in the second half.
I thought once Uruguay scored the first goal, the game was over because Venezuela looked dominant in the first few minutes. After the first goal, it looked somewhat even, but the second half was just completely domination by Uruguay.
So a lot of people before the game were not huge. You know, there's a lot of questions still about Tavares, the coach, and he called up the Arrascaeta and Lodeiro. Lodeiro has been playing for Seattle. He's been playing super well, but playing super well in the MLS does not have quite the same cachet as it does really anywhere. And when he called him up as a starter, people were not happy. The Twitter universe, can we say Twitter universe? Is that a thing? Is it a universe? Twitter people? Tweeple? How do we explain the people on Twitter? The
Twitter sphere?
You know, Twitter sphere. That works. The Twitter sphere was grumbling about Nico Lodeiro as a starter over the Arrascaeta, who plays in Uruguay. And I think for me, I was nervous. I wasn't quite sure. I was sort of holding out like a wait and see. Lodeiro nailed it. I was so thrilled with the way, not only for the goal, although that header was, I think my neighbor's neighbors heard me scream and shout, but the vision that he had and the passing ability, those link ups between Cavani and Sanchez and Suarez made me so much more confident that we finally have a team that is going to talk to each other. It hasn't looked like that since 2010. I'm so happy. I just kept it like little by little. I was breathing a little bit more. Cavani, that start, anytime you could start a second half with a goal, like before the first minute, you're doing okay. You're making me feel better. And Sanchez, where if there is a like delivery place in Monterrey where I can send Sanchez flowers or I don't know, like bizcochos, can somebody just call me and let me know? Because I love that man. I love him.
It's
awesome.
The one thing you have to say about Uruguay is how strong their spine looks now. You know, they're at full strength. They've got two of the best central defenders around.
But the thing is, we're never really at full strength and we don't have a deep bench.
No, but I'm more sort of looking forward to maybe next year and a couple of years' time in the World Cup. Yeah, hopefully, you know, those players will target to be fit for that competition. And if we looked ahead to there, you would have to say that Uruguay are going into that with a really strong looking spine, especially how well Sanchez is improving.
I love him.
Game on game, really. Every time I see him, he looks like he's gone up another level. I think
he's 31 years old, and to me, he's the most fit he's ever been.
Yeah, you know, Europe's maybe come too late for him, but he looks like one of those players who's maybe peaked late in his career. Maybe 2018. Yeah. I was just about to say maybe 2018 might come too late for him, but
I don't know. I think we do this with.
I think it'd go, but I'm just not sure, you know, he's still going to be this effective.
But remember that 2010 was Forlan and Lugano's best year, and they were both in their 30s. And I think Arevalo Rios right now is, you know, granted that shirt's fitting him really tightly, but he is a stalwart in midfield. I mean, nothing is getting by him. He may not have the pace, but he has the strength. So, and he is 97 years old. In football years, you know, so if you can have these really young guys, if you can have Vecino and La Salt with a senior debut, but also have these, you know, I don't want to say old because they're not, they're really not, but these seniors, for me, it's like a really sort of nice balance of that sort of has worked for us really well. You could disagree. I won't cry too much.
Yeah, I think age is possibly the only barrier. You know, even Luis Suarez here being in his 30s come the 2018 World Cup as well. But he doesn't strike me as the sort of player who's suddenly going to drop massively. Maybe in his mid-30s he might have a drop. But at 31, he'd probably be okay. Yeah, and Cavani's a bit younger than him, I think. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's exciting times these next couple of years for Uruguay. I think, yes, the first 11 got some aging players in it, but I think, you know, at a World Cup, a good mix of youth and experience. There's a few promising youngsters as we heard on the Uruguay pod that we did together a few months ago now coming through. And you only need like a couple of those to really hit on in the next couple of years in the build up to that World Cup, and yeah, I think Uruguay go into that as a dark horse. I'm doing my best to jinx them here, by the way.
I know, I feel it, and I'm not letting you get away with it. I'm changing the subject right now. Don't do it. What you got? I said some nice things about Chile. What did you guys think about Venezuela?
Lightweight. That's all I gotta say.
Listen, Venezuela in the Copa America, they have their moments, and they've got their players. They had a very strong first half. They didn't have the finish. Anybody give them a chance? Simon Edwards, you've been very quiet. Chime in here.
Yeah, they've been playing quite well, but in terms of qualification, they're so far behind at the moment. They're going to really struggle. Just 2 points, bottom of the table. So, yes, I think they've got some good players. I think the football in Venezuela and the national team is much more technical, much more offensive than it's been 5 or 6 years ago. So I think there's good progress being made, but they need a mix between the hardworking, grinding out results kind of football they played 5, 6 years ago and the more attractive technical football they're playing now, because they're not getting the points despite playing quite well recently.
Simon, let's talk about Paraguay and Colombia so that I can get some sense of how much my heart is going to be palpitating on Tuesday. So let's do this selfishly for me.
Okay. Well, the team that Peckerman chose for the game was quite surprising. There were a few interesting changes. Firstly, Jason Murillo, who's plays for Inter Milan. He's had a few injuries. He's not been in the team so much recently for Inter. But it was a big surprise because he's played consistently for Colombia. He's one of the only players who's played consistently for the last 2 or 3 years. He was dropped, and Jerry Mina came in defense. He's like 1 point, he's like 2 meters tall almost. Very tall, strong aerial presence. The thinking was that Colombia have been struggling a little bit with corners, with crosses. Paraguay could have exploited that. So they brought in Jerry Mina, who's been playing well in Brazil. He scored 4 goals as well, so he's a good threat going forward with corners in attack. So the defense, we had Arias and Diaz at fullbacks, which seems quite settled now. Oscar Murillo, who plays in Mexico, has been playing really well. He kept his place. And Jerry Mina moved into the centre-back as well. So the defence did really well, considering. In attack, it was a little bit strange. Colombia have a good mix of kind of playmakers and direct wingers / strikers who are a little bit less finesse, but dangerous and direct. In this game, whereas previously they kind of left out Cuadrado in favour of, well, obviously James Rodriguez, but also guys like Edwin Cardona, Magnelli Torres, the kind of more technical, creative players. But in this game, they just went for the direct pace. So they had Cuadrado on one wing, Carlos Bacca on the other, and then, Carlos Bacca as a centre forward, and Luis Muriel on the other wing. So it was very much, looking for space, looking direct, running. Which is an interesting decision, especially given that the midfield was very defensive focused, or at least deep lying ball players. So Carlos Sanchez, who was excellent. Carlos Sanchez, if you watch him play for Aston Villa, you have no idea of what he can do, because he is so dominant in midfield. He just wins everything. He's everywhere. He plays with a lot of calm, which again, if you're an Aston Villa fan, you'd find difficult to believe. But for Colombia, he is so calm on the ball that he wins it with aggression and then gets it and plays it simple, which is really nice. So he was a really good player. Wilmar Barrios kept his place from the Brazil game. He was good. He's very energetic, very athletic. And then the big surprise was Abel Aguila, who's been around the Colombian team for 10 years or so, but he's not been playing particularly well. He plays for Deportivo Cali. He's moved back to Colombia. He's in his 30s now. And Deportivo Cali are not in a good moment. They're struggling a little bit in the league, like lower mid-table. And he hasn't been playing that well. He hasn't always been playing for Deportivo Cali. So it was a very surprising decision. He's a good player. He's a tidy player. He passes the ball well. He works hard. He's a personality and he's intelligent. But he doesn't push on and link with the strikers. So Colombia found themselves quite stretched. The midfield were all deep-lying players. And I think the idea was draw the pressure on for Paraguay and then hit on the break. Paraguay were not necessarily playing into their hands. Not that they sat deep themselves, but that they were very organized and the defense didn't necessarily leave the space behind particularly often, and they were very competitive and compact and tidy. So the formation wasn't really working, and it was 0-0 going into the last minute or so. The guy who came on and scored the goal was, again, one of these players who's has a bit more finesse, a bit more creativity, Edwin Cardona. And also Alex Mejia came on as well. I think for me, Alex Mejia probably should have started the game. He's incredibly underrated. He's such an intelligent player. He was kind of the driving force for me behind Nacional in the Libertadores. He's such a big personality, a strong defensive player, good on the ball. I think he would have really helped in the midfield. But Edwin Cardona is the guy who scored the goal, and it's his second last minute winner, his third injury time goal for the Colombia team. He's a very good substitute to bring on. people suggest he's a little overweight, a little out of shape. And if you look at him, you may think so. But he's surprisingly quick, and he may not cover that much ground over 90 minutes, but he's got real quality. And for the goal, he linked up really well with Carlos Bacca to score with a really nice dinked finish. Carlos Bacca hasn't been playing very well. He has a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of pace, and he runs around a lot, but he missed an open goal. Yeah, his final ball wasn't always there. There's a few chances where he could have squared it and Colombia could have scored. So the overall in the game, Colombia were better in the first half. Paraguay were better for most of the second half. But then with the changes, Colombia got a little bit more of a foothold in the game. The midfield linked a little bit more with the attack, and they were fortunate more than anything to get the winner at the end with a nice little 1-2 with Bacca and Cardona and a cheeky dinked finish to win the game. So I'm delighted. It wasn't a dominant win. It wasn't a win that necessarily creates lots of confidence, but it was a good win. And it is nice that Colombia have different options. I don't necessarily think this was the best option for this game. I also don't think against Brazil playing Magnelli was the right option, but options are always good. I don't think Uruguay should be terrified, but I think it should be a tough game in Colombia.
Okay, so Simon, if I give you the bedazzled coach hat, what do you do looking ahead to Tuesday? You're playing at home. Do you keep the same lineup? Do you switch it around a little bit?
Yerry Mina came in predominantly for his aerial ability, but he played really well. So
I know, and I love that you're telling us that he's 2 meters tall, and I'm probably going to have to go Google exactly what that is. Because we don't learn the metric system, and we're all dumb.
Yeah, it's just what he's called in Colombia.
That's because the rest of the world learns the right way. And I can't even ask the rest of you because you all learned the right way and I didn't.
I don't know. That's not right. I Googled it. It says he's 16.25 feet. I've done that wrong. That's
probably not correct. but he's actually a skyscraper.
He's the option in terms of winning the ball in the air. I think Jason Murillo may come back in. He's very tidy, good on the ball, fairly quick. Yeah, so it's a toss up between the two.
Well, 1.95 meters according to various sites he is. So that roughly equates to about 6 points.
Fan. World football indexers who are raising children in the United States of America, please teach them the metric system. They will be very grateful when they grow up and feel dumb. Keep going, please, Simon.
No, so I think the defense, either the same or with Jason Murillo back in. Arias didn't have the best game. Freda Diaz is very good. I'm not sure about Arias, but I think for now he'll keep his place. In midfield, I mean, it really depends on James if he's going to declare himself fit. It was in the Copa America, he came back very quickly. He's very enthusiastic. He's very keen to play for Colombia. I don't think Real Madrid are particularly happy that he's so forceful in that. But that will be a big question. If he's available, then obviously James will have to come in and make the right decision. I think Bacca, just because Colombia don't have an obvious alternative in attack, not to say that there's not good attackers. Roger Martinez, who's now playing, I think, in China, again, that kind of undermines his value a little bit. Orlando Berrio as well is a good attacker, play for Nacional. He's in the squad now. So I think probably Bacca will be the main striker. I think if Colombia have more possession, they need some more quality in midfield linking with the attack. So perhaps Sebastian Perez comes in. Colombia have so many different options in midfield. So I think Carlos Sanchez is a definite. And then, yeah, just take your pick. It depends on James, really. But I think the most important thing is to have that link between the attack and the deep-lying midfielders. And kind of try and focus on getting a little bit more possession. Cuadrado played well. He should keep his place, I think. So, yeah, depends on James, but that's the main focus for Beckham. I'll leave him to make the decision. But that's my advice.
That's
link between the midfield and the attack.
Is there a sense with James about when he's going to announce his fitness?
Well, he passed the initial test and he's traveling to the coast for the game. So I think it's still not certain whether he's going or not. By the time this pod comes out, maybe they'll know for sure. I think he'll be involved at some point in the game. I don't think they would have taken him if they thought it was unlikely, and having passed the initial fitness test and he's very keen to play and Peckerman's let him play partly injured before. So I think he'll make an appearance at some point.
All right, you're ready for this seamless transition? Watch how I do this. Ready? Speaking of injuries, let's talk about Argentina. Get it? Because Messi's injured? That was really good. I'm so impressed with myself. Wow. Okay. Brian, it's your turn. You waited so patiently. Let's talk Argentina, Peru. There is no one safe in the South American qualifiers. And you know this because Argentina tied. That is like the litmus test of uncertainty, which is kind of cool and amazing. We're bypassing Brazil, guys. They won 5-0 at home to Bolivia. Bolivians, you'll get this back when you play at home. You're fine. So we're just going to get right to Argentina, Peru. So, Brian, on a scale of 1 to like jumping up and down, you couldn't sit still, how nervous were you before this game?
To be honest, I was more nervous for the Ecuador game, if I'm to be completely honest, because this team with Bausa, I can't take it seriously. I just can't. After that performance at Venezuela, I was a bit more nervous as the game came closer, but overall, I was more nervous for the Ecuador game because we were just in such poor form after losing to Bolivia in a game where they were missing Chumacero. I thought we were playing awful football in the qualifiers, but so I was more nervous for that. But this Argentina team just doesn't scare me. It really doesn't.
Is that because they don't have Messi, or is this an Argentina team in general that you don't think is playing up to par?
It's a bit of both, because without Messi, they're poor, yes. But, you know, with the players they have, they shouldn't be so poor, because, like, when was the last time Aguero has done anything of note for the national team? Higuain is very inconsistent. Like, if you see the World Cup, he's had some terrible games, like in the finals, and then he scored in important games, like against Belgium, for example. Dybala is not been great for the national team in his first few games, if we're to be completely fair. And some of the other players are just aging. Like, that lineup against Peru, I just cannot understand it. I don't ever recall, I mean, I don't follow the Premier League that much, but I don't recall Aguero being an attacking midfielder. And what's with starting Zabaleta over Mercado? Like, I can't complain because it made the game a lot easier for us, but Mercado is a lot better than aging Zabaleta.
Adam and Simon, agree, disagree?
Well, I think the big miss for Argentina was Banega in midfield, who they brought on for like the last 20 minutes, and it made an instant difference to them. I know that
that's what I was going to say.
He came on for Aguero, I think, didn't he? And Argentina got a little bit of control of the game suddenly, and that's when Higuain got the goal, which looked like it had won it for Argentina, which was against the run of play over the course of the match, but in that little segment of the game, Argentina had suddenly picked up, and I think Banega's presence was a big reason for that. But it ended up Mascherano giving the ball away in a terrible position. Funes Mori gave the penalty away. Well, I don't know. I think it was clumsy. I think it wasn't that much protest from Funes Mori in Argentina, was there?
If you see the replays, though, as much as I hate to admit it, especially after that handball controversy against Brazil, it was a dive. I didn't pay attention to it the first time because I was just too happy we got a penalty. And I was too nervous because I thought we were going to miss it because Romero is good at saving penalties, but it was a dive. I saw the replays earlier today, and yeah, it was a blatant dive.
Yeah, Guerrero really wasn't a Guerrero in that one situation. He ran in front of the he cut across the defender. The defender kind of put a hand on his shoulder to kind of move himself to the side to get out of the way, basically. Guerrero felt the touch, threw himself kind of away from goal, and threw himself to the ground. I think it was a very soft penalty.
But to be honest, I can't complain with the dive because the whole game we've been getting bullshit offside calls. So there's so many offside calls which weren't offsides, mostly on Guerrero, and I can't complain with the dive. You know, the same thing happened in the Brazil game. Brazil had got away with so much that people did not realize, and everyone decided to blame the handball on us, calling us cheaters, which I guess it was kind of fair, but if you look at the bigger picture, Brazil did get away, like, for example, that goal that Ecuador scored against them in the first game, which was disallowed, and it was a genuine goal.
I think that the players have to know with these new FIFA regulations that they're going to be called a lot more for these types of fouls. So dive or not, it is this new sort of FIFA regulation happening. Adam, we can ask Stevie Grieve to weigh in on this in the next tactics pod about what he thinks or not. But it was not as surprising as it could have been. And I think, like you said, there was no real protest happening. Brian, that was a Christian Cuellar's penalty was spot on. And again, you're right. This is not an easy place to take a penalty.
You know, Romero isn't a great keeper, but he's probably one of the best penalty savers in the world, in my opinion. If you look at penalty shootouts, not counting even the ones against Chile, the one this year anyways, not last year. But then you look at games against like the Netherlands in the World Cup, where he was the hero in the penalty shootout. And then you see the Copa America, if you remember Sejas' penalty against him, that was a studied penalty because he saw the Copa Sudamericana final where he did the same thing against Huracan. So he's a really good penalty saver. He's not a great keeper normally, but when it comes to penalties, he just doesn't disappoint.
I'm stealing your brilliant last name analysis here, but Guerrero, who had his moments, granted, really is talismanic for Peru. He had the equalizer goal. He also is staunch as captain, as sort of this. How old is he now, guys? Does Google know? Do you know? Anybody have this offhand?
I'm not sure about the exact age, but he's around like 32, 33, around that age. The thing about Guerrero, though, is he's a player who's been on the national team from the very beginning, and he's going to be there until the very end. Like the 2010 qualifiers, Pizarro, Farfán weren't on it because of whole controversy prior to the game versus Ecuador. Then this qualifiers, Gareca decided they weren't professional enough. But Guerrero has always had the right attitude for the national team. He's one of the few players who's psychologically right about the way of going things. He's always had the right attitude. Fox Sports, the people from Fox Sports saw it. It was over all of my Twitter today, and there were even videos about it. But usually, they're usually pretty biased toward Argentina, but like they were very impressed. And, you know, in his prime, I think he's a genuine world-class player. The only thing is he's not in his prime so often. Like, we saw it once yesterday, but he's usually not, like, he's usually just arguing with the refs. He's more focused about staying on the floor than actually playing proper football. And that's what holds him back from actually being a world-class player. That's why it's like, I don't agree with this whole, if he was Peruvian, then he wouldn't be playing, because Pizarro played for Bayern Munich. So there's really no excuse. And, you know, even Solano played for Newcastle United, which were a big club back in the day. So
Argentina right now, guys, are in fifth on the table, meaning that, and there's a lot of anxiety, I mean, football to go. If things stayed the way they stayed right now, they would be in the position to play a playoff match against
New Zealand, almost certainly.
It's going to be Oceania. Yeah.
It'd be against the winner of that section, which 99% chance it'd be New Zealand.
So this is unprecedented that it would be Argentina playing.
I was talking to some Argentinians, and one thing they told me, and even the Fox Sports people said it, and it's very believable because if you see most of Argentina's squads, they're usually all the same. What this Argentinian said is that Argentina isn't a national team. It's a friends club, because if you think about it, they keep calling up the same goalkeepers when there's a very good option in Franco Armani. I don't know if Simon would agree with me on this, but he's a very good option. Yes.
Love Franco Armani. Great goalkeeper.
He's a very good goalkeeper, and he's not getting called up, and he's not going to get called up because Romero is part of Messi's group of friends. That's what he's told me. I believe Demi Kelis is as well, because, you know, I didn't get that call up. I'm pretty sure he doesn't even have a club. He's Espanol, but maybe Wikipedia's a bit outdated, because I did hear someone say he didn't have a club.
And Armani is going to be eligible for Colombia quite soon, and there's talk that he may become nationalized and be the backup to Ospina for Colombia in the future.
He should, because he's not going to get called up to Argentina. In my opinion, he's the best Argentine goalkeeper, but he's not going to get called up. It's that simple. I think there's been so many call-ups since he's been performing well. I've rated him since 2014, and I always thought he should get called up, and not once has he been called up. Even as Libertadores champions, he's not been called up. He's just not going to get called up. It's that simple.
We've got a weekend and 2 days between now and our next round. I will ask you two majorly important questions. Where will you be to watch these games? And impossibly, your predictions on how you think your team will fare. So, Simon, you go first.
Okay, so Colombia is actually playing at 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon. I don't know where I'll be. Maybe at home. Maybe go to Parque Lleras. I don't love Parque Lleras, but it's where everyone kind of hangs out and gets together in my neighborhood. Maybe there or maybe at home. It's a bit strange having a 3:30 kickoff on a Tuesday. But, you know, we need to inflict the Colombian heat on Uruguay. What do I think the result will be? I think there'll be goals. I think there'll be a few goals in the game. I reckon, well, I have to predict Colombia's going to win. I'd say 2-1 to Colombia, maybe. Maybe a 97th minute Edwin Cardona winner.
God, I don't even want to think about why there's going to be 7 minutes of extra time. I can't even deal with it. Brian.
This is a great opportunity to beat Chile. And I think it's a winnable game. But knowing Peru, we're going to lose it. Against Bolivia, it was extremely winnable. We were training in altitude for a few weeks. And we even had a lot of the local league players, if that's how you want to translate it. But we had a lot of those players who usually play in altitude a few times a season. And we still lost it 2-0. I have no hope away from home. I just hope we score because we haven't scored a single goal away from home. And we've been on a lot of teams' halves in most of those games. Like against Colombia, for example. And Uruguay, we were in their half for a lot of the game, and we just didn't do any damage. We hit the post, I think, in both games once, but we just didn't do anything. And it doesn't matter how many players Chile are missing. We're not going to win it. I just can't see it happening. I want to have hope, but we haven't won away from home since 2004. So I can't see where we're going to get the win.
Okay. Adam Brandon, what do you got for me?
I'm thinking about trying to change my Chile's luck a little bit by maybe watching it in a different place apart from my home. I might pop out somewhere to watch it instead. See if that brings a change of luck. As for a prediction for the match, well, like I said earlier, Chile's defence worries me. The backup options are all very inexperienced players. So if he does go with them, they're going to be very nervous. It's a tough one. A draw wouldn't surprise me. But I'm hoping that Chile can sneak it. If I had to put money on it, I'd probably just edge towards Chile winning it. But a draw wouldn't surprise me. But I'm not sure in the long term Chile winning it is great news, really, anyway. It might keep PC in the job for the next two games after that, which are Colombia away and Uruguay at home, which, you know, is make or break time, really, these next three matches.
I'd also like to add that since, like I mentioned earlier, like us Peruvians see Chile as a rival, and Chileans don't. And I've noticed this does affect the matches because we always get a sending off in our matches against Chile. We didn't get a sending off in the last match. Well, no, yeah, we did. Cueva got sent off. I almost forgot for a second. But we always get a sending off in one of those matches, and it wouldn't surprise me to see another one.
Chile are pretty infamous for their red cards as well. So
I believe one of Adam's optimistic tweets during the Chilean game was...
I still can't believe that Vidal stayed on. If I was sure that he was going to kick someone and make sure that he missed the next game or something. But unbelievably, he got sent off this time. Although didn't have Gary Medel around this time to insult the ref.
He preemptively got sent off for you. That was so sweet. I will have to remember what I was wearing when we beat Venezuela so I could wear the exact same thing to harness whatever luck I can get. Oh, God, I don't know how I cannot jinx this by saying that we are going to win or by guessing that we won't. I'm afraid, but I made you guys all do it, so I guess I have to do it too. I think this defense is just not holding up so well. But you know what? I'm going to go with the power of positive thinking, my friends, and say that we are going to eke it out 2-1. And Cavani is going to just keep the streak alive. That's what's going to happen. And next time, when you guys join us, we will have so much more to talk about. And we'll let you know how our predictions panned out. Adam Brandon, catch us up. Tell us what's happening on the world of patreon.com/worldfootballindex. Is it a slash? Is it a backslash?
Why do you always give this to me today?
Do you want me to do it? Simon, do you want to do it?
Yeah, Simon's much part of the team.
Yeah, I'll do it.
So he's doing it this time.
Is it a / Simon? Is it a / Is it a hyphen?
I'm involved in logistics as well. I can just say it's good. It's a forward slash, I think.
Tell us all about it.
Okay, so at the World Football Index, there's so many great podcasts that are being put out, but it's a lot of work. We've got lots of plans, lots of new things happening, lots of new podcasts, lots of interesting contributors. But all of this takes up a lot of time and a lot of effort. And, you know, we really appreciate all the listeners, all you guys following us on Twitter and contributing and helping us out. Yeah, you can help us out further by contributing a little bit of money on the Patreon website to help cover some of the costs and come on the time of all of the editors behind the stage doing all the boring editing work that makes the show come together. Also, there's some interesting rewards and things you can contribute towards and receive. So yeah, so if you appreciate the work of World Football Index, if you want to get some additional benefits from following the podcast, you can pledge a small amount of money. There's some additional things you can see on the website. So go to patreon.com/World Football Index. Help us out with the work that we do and receive some rewards in exchange in return.
That was beautiful. See, I told you.
You should make Simon do that all the time. Yay! All right, so while you're waiting for the release of our next podcast, go to patreon.com/World Football Index. That's exactly what Simon said, and do all the things that Simon just said. Yay! And we will see you next time on World Football Index, the South American podcast. We're so glad you joined us today.
Where can we find you, Jesse, on Twitter?
Oh my goodness, Adam, I was so excited by Simon's amazing rendering of that and his great accent that I forgot to ask the important question. Ugh, Simon, you did it too well. I am on Twitter at Jesse Loesch, tweeting about Uruguay and my anxiety about Uruguay. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me confusingly at Kanija Scores. Yeah, even though I'm a so-called expert on Chilean football, my Twitter account's named after an Argentinian. There you go.
I'm not biased. Your second favorite country is Ecuador. All of us are feeling very upset.
I'm a very complex character.
Simon, you've been tweeting lately, and we're so proud. Where can we find your tweets?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Simon Edwards SAF. This week I've been emotional. I've been energized. Mostly frustrations, despair at the Colombian political situation. So there's lots of angry, upset tweets about the ridiculous situation in Colombia with the whole vote and it's interesting. If you want some telenovela, soap opera drama, follow what's happening in Colombia right now. With Oribe. Oribe is back. Shock horror. Anyway, that's a whole different podcast. But I also posted a picture of a free kick I scored. So if you want to see some South American footballing talent, then there's a Simon Edwards free kick on your Twitter as well. So at Simon Edwards SAF for stuff and things.
Dodgy keeper. That's all I'm saying.
It definitely wasn't a cross. Don't believe that. It was Ronaldinho against England, 2002. Dropped it in.
Where can we find you, Brian?
Brian El Peruano, but that is a new Twitter, so it's got not many followers right now. But yeah, that's the Twitter I'll be using.
All right, everybody follow Brian, and let's see what he tweets. Excellent. And we'll all follow each other, and we'll tweet at each other, and it'll be a tweet fest. And next time, maybe we'll discuss the tweets that we tweet. Oh no, we better stop this before I start making up words for Twitter. All right. Next time on World Football Index, the South American podcast.